Someone sent a mail to me asking what is the role of mantras in this teaching. The word mantra itself means to free the mind. Mantra, traditionally given by sages to their disciples as a part of initiation, which made them empowered. My guru didn't give mantras, and his guru selectively imparted mantras where he felt maybe that is the best approach for a particular individual. But the point is that the mantra itself, as Sri Aurobindo says, has no effect at the level of mental repetition. It has to be felt and internalized. In this sense, this whole teaching is a mantra. This whole teaching that everything is God's will is a mantra. To accept that in daily living is a mantra. A mantra being lived. To accept that this too shall pass is a mantra, which is being lived. To accept that nobody truly does anything is a mantra. These are mantras through which life is happening. This is the power of the understanding. Because when you start viewing life through this prism, through this light, you are living the mantras. To be internalized means the ajapa jap. It arises from within on its own. This is it. If someone upsets you and you have the full understanding that the person, just like you, is shaped by his conditioning or her conditioning and genetics and is an instrument of the divine just as you are, that is the mantra in operation. To accept that change is the basis of life, pleasure one moment, pain the other, that acceptance is the mantra. Why? Because this frees the mind. It frees the thinking mind, which is always going into the dead past or an imaginary future. When there is no hatred, malice, blame, condemnation, jealousy, envy, spite, guilt, shame, the thinking mind is not operating anymore. One is being in the moment. Isn't that the purpose of the mantras? And that is when, as Nisargadatta Maharaj says, one is not using consciousness, but one is established as consciousness, pure being, pure presence in the moment. And that is a living meditation. Aurobindo said there is no point sitting for 1 hour in meditation and the rest of your day is topsy-turvy. Meditation is not separate from daily living. How you are at work, how you are with your friends, with strangers, your relationships with not only people but with events that happen during the day. That is the meditation. Not the 1 hour meditation, 2 hour meditation, half an hour practice. What happens the rest of the day? The gift of the teaching is the living meditation. In deep sleep, the thinking mind is absent. That is why we say we slept so well. That is proof enough that it is the absence of the rampant thinking mind which creates stories, dramas, conflicts with what is. It is the absence of that which is the presence of peace. It does not produce the peace. The peace is there. It doesn't have to be worked hard towards. The absence of the one who wants to work hard towards peace is the presence of peace. But we are so used to doing things, to acquire things, that we have to work towards peace. I received a mail from someone who said that they are at peace and they are so happy that now they want to give peace to others. Can the sun give its light to others, or is it the nature of the sun to shine? There is no question of giving peace. To be at peace is to give the peace. It is not a commodity to give. Something I can do, I can give peace to another. It's not possible. If peace is one's nature, that peace shines like the sun, touching everyone equally, not selectively. The sun does not choose that I am going to direct some rays on Ramesh ji, on Mohan, on Asha, but not here, not on Anoop, not on Dipesh. It is an equal peace. It is an equal light. Why do we find some people are more peaceful than others? Because it is the absence of the thinking mind. Sorry to hear about what happened at home. Some part of the building came down?
Yeah.
And y'all were in the building?
No, we were out. Basically, the first house gifted by my parents to me. So they shifted to another house. So
this is what came in the papers 2 days ago?
Two buildings collapsed. One was in the car and the one on the outside.
So you're okay? I have a Ramesh ji sitting in front of me. My guru's name was Ramesh. So now whenever I see you, I'll remember him. He had passed away on 27th September 2009, which in that year was the last day of Navratri, I remember. And in one of his early books, he had written that the sage is comfortable with dying because he is comfortable with living, which means being comfortable with what happens. One may not like what happens, but one is yet comfortable with what happens. In fact, I would say he was quite looking forward to leaving the body. And when I had visited him in the ICU once, briefly, one can only go briefly in the ICU, so I asked him, I said, I'm sure you must be wanting to go home. Who wants to spend time in an ICU? And he said, yes, but meanwhile, witnessing is happening. He just like swept the whole ICU with his hand like that and said, witnessing is happening. Has the teaching helped in any way with what has happened? In terms of the way you view it or see things. You don't know?
It's like it's there, so what to do?
Exactly.
Work for the next plan. Yeah. Some deed is waiting to happen.
Yeah. That is also mantra, what to do. That's it, actually. It's so simple. It's so simple that you don't get it, as Ramesh would say. Beauty and simplicity brings so much clarity in daily living. So one sees things as they are, including one's suffering. Nothing is excluded from the human experience. from the short-lived human experience. Of a fixed number of years, of which one-third in any case you're not aware of your own existence because you're in deep sleep. So even shorter-lived human experience. Just crunch down to that, which becomes me and my story and my problems and my conflicts and everything that disturbs my peace of mind. Again, I received a question saying, why do you go on and on about peace of mind? So I said, I don't. The Buddha himself has said, samsara is dukkha and nirvana is shanti. So don't blame me. When Ramana Maharshi was asked, how does one know that a sage is a sage? His reply was, by the degree of peace you feel in his presence and the sense of respect that you feel for him. Peace. But it's too simple. So what sitting in meditation does, sitting in silence specifically, and allowing whatever arises in terms of thoughts to arise, is one taps into witnessing. Just like witnessing the cars on the street going by, without judging the cars, without judging the thoughts. Because it is the me which comes in through the back door and says, I should not be thinking this. So true meditation is just sitting and witnessing whatever comes, comes. Even if the mind runs away with the thought and one realizes, oh God, I was thinking about this problem. At that moment when the realization has happened, the involvement is cut off, which is also not your doing. At a certain point in the thinking, the realization came, I was involved, which cuts off the realization, then you're back to the moment. This process permeates daily living. That is why sitting in silence has tremendous benefits, because then one starts witnessing whatever transpires in life during the course of the day. Witnessing happens more and more. Rather than getting embroiled in the experience. As Maharaj said, a wedge is put between being and experiencing. Trishla, right? Why are you holding your bag? Keep it down. Unless there's something precious in it. You know, Bhagwan Ramana Maharshi said it's like the Gopurams in the temple thinking that they are holding the temple up. The concept of doership is so ingrained in us that it is like the Gopurams in the temple which are carved as part of the temple carvings, thinking they are holding it up, which is what we do. I had mentioned a few times about one income tax officer. Were you here when I mentioned it? My auditors had called me saying that you are being called to the income tax office. Now, we are very small company. So I said, why would he even waste his time and my time, you know? And usually the auditors and the CAs go for any scrutiny or whatever. So he said, you're right, I don't know why he said it, I'll just go and meet him or send someone. He said, no, I would like the owner of this publishing company to come. So I got quite scared. Being of timid nature, I said, God knows what's going to happen. I said, I'm not coming. You have to deal with it. I'm giving you a fee. So it's your problem. So he was quite perplexed because he called me up saying that I told the income tax officer that you are unable to come and I'm there to help. But he said in that case, he'll come to your office. So I got even more scared. Income tax officer coming to your offices. So he came and he sat in front of me. I offered him tea, coffee, whatever. And he said, I just wanted to meet you because I have read so many of the books you all have published and it has really impacted me. I was so relieved to hear that. But then he said something very beautiful which has stayed with me. I asked him what got him onto the spiritual journey and he said it was a terminal illness from which he got cured. But then his whole interests, his whole thinking changed and he came onto the spiritual path. But before leaving, he said that the way I want to live my life is without disturbing anyone, without causing harm intentionally or unintentionally to anyone. And I just want my life to be as minimally disturbing as a comma in a sentence. That's it. That was very touching. And that is why Maharaj has said, forget loving others. It's enough if you don't harm others. Start with that at least. Start with just simple things. And to blame and condemn is to harm. Imagine if the entire world, everyone didn't harm another, what would be left is peace. Because when one does not harm another, it actually means that there is no other apart from you to harm. If there is no other apart from you to harm, it means there is no other. And if there is no other, there is no me, separate from the other. Is this your first time? So what brings you here?
He is my friend. He allowed me to come.
He dragged you here?
Not like that. He told me about the talk. Then I told him it's okay. I didn't listen to you any time before. I felt it's nice time to spend here. Somehow I felt like that when he told about the talk. So, it will be a nice time.
And have you changed your mind now?
No.
So it was time well spent.
Yes.
Where are you from?
Hyderabad.
When I went to my spiritual teacher, who was not my spiritual teacher at that time, I was dragged there by my sister. It was a Sunday morning and Saturday nights were, when one was young, one was out late in the night. So I was having no intention to go, but somehow I landed up there. And after the first talk, I told my sister, you wasted my Sunday morning. She said, why? I said, I have not come here to listen to someone say everything is God's will when it is so obvious. It is one's life's experience. But the joke is that I went back the next Sunday. Something pulled me back. You see, that is how limited the thinking mind is. It may think that this is not for me, this is boring, but the universe has a totally different agenda, completely unknown to you. Thank God for it, you see. Thank God for these limitations. And then I ended up spending 9 years with him till he passed away. That is the compassion of the universe, the way it works. You have been here before?
No, I'm on your mailing list.
Okay, you're from Bombay?
I live in London, UK.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, I came across your talk about 2 years ago on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
Really liked it. Then I joined your mailing list.
Okay.
Now that I came to Bombay, just recently, a short trip.
Okay.
Yes, I just remembered your talk is today, so I told my friend also.
Okay. So he was visiting you?
Yeah.
What is your name?
Jairam.
Jairam, and yours?
Shiv Prasad.
Shiv Prasad. Wow, Shiv Prasad. I'm blessed. And Jairam. I love Indian names, yeah. It feels so great, no? You're beautiful. We come to London once a year for the London Book Fair. Yeah, which is around Feb, March.
Do you give talks there?
No, not yet. Someone has invited me in Birmingham. Is it close by?
It's not very far.
Okay, so we may do that. But, you know, we had a retreat in Goa last weekend. So, yesterday I was talking to a school friend. It was his birthday. Who I was close to in the first 3-4 years of school. So, he was asking me. He's a practitioner of TM. So he was asking me what was the structure of the day. So I said first was a talk, then followed by a question answer, and then in the evening a book reading, followed by silent sitting. So he said, but Gautam, it should have been the reverse. So I said, why? He said, you should have started with silent sitting. So I said, why do you say that? He said, because since I know you, that has been your forte. Because I remember at that age, you know, in school, in the lunch breaks, I would go and sit. I was not one to play around and all. I would take a chair and sit by the window and look out. So people thought I was shy and introverted, which I was. But the preference was to sit quietly. It's comes from that far for everyone, you know, all our innate nature comes from those years.
Please let me know if you're coming to London. You can stay with me.
Thank you. Which part of London are you?
Right in the city. Where? Close to the city.
Because what we do is, that's my wife, Devika. We stay in around Soho because it's very easy to meet people and travel to the book fair and has nice restaurants.
Oh, yeah. But it's not a vegetarian.
Lots, yeah.
Recently, while reading the spiritual books, I have come across two different, opposite to each other, statements of two enlightened sages. Ramesh Palsekar said that everything is predestined, even from conception to the death. Sadhguru Jaggi Vasudev, he says nothing is predestined, everything is created by you, even death. Of course, it is done unconsciously. So both seems to be a different, opposite statements. How do you
see? I don't know the context in which Sadhguru has said that. Context is very important, but the fact is, one doesn't know what the next moment is going to bring. It could even be death.
But it's a clear statement. He says that it is everything is predestined from conception to death.
Exactly, right.
He says nothing is predestined, even death. Then he further says that everything is created by you, and of course, unconsciously.
You'll have to see the context in which he said that.
In the statement in his daily quote.
My understanding is, this very moment being alive is not in my hands, and what happens the next moment is not in my hands. But what, as Dayanand Saraswati says, which I often use the example which he uses, when he was asked about free will, does the human being have free will? He said, if you take a goat and you put a leash around its neck and tie it to a post in the ground, now that goat can roam around the ground to the extent of the length of the rope. The length of the rope is predetermined for the goat. Within that, the goat can move around. Which means, what is predetermined for us is fixed. What we do within that, where we go, is up to us. Which means, we have no control over what life brings, but over our attitude to life, which is a living understanding. And my attitude to life is my attitude to the other. Now, why I say context is important is, let's take this example of a part of the building collapsing. Now, God forbid, if someone was there, is it in their control that they can choose their death? The building collapsed. What could they do about it? So, such a sweeping statement cannot be made. There must be a context within which it is said. Now, what happens is, with such incidents in life, such crises we face, whether they are health crises, whether some event happens, it is the attitude to that incident, to that event, which is ours. And this is where the ancient teachings come in, to show us how things are, how they can be viewed, which shapes our attitude. There are too many events which are not in our control. If it weren't for gravity, you would be up on the ceiling. The moon causes the high tide and low tide, and our bodies are 70% water. So even many emotions we feel our own, are they our own? The rotation of the earth, we have no control over. The revolution of the earth around the sun, we have no control over. The blood coursing through our veins, we have no control over. Very little is in our control. Shirdi Sai Baba himself has said, and many sages, that everything is predetermined in the sense it's already in your astral body and projects itself out at the predetermined time, whereas it appears like an outside event has happened. And death actually refers to the death of the thinking mind. That is why the Buddhists say all fears, not some, not most, all fears are eventually connected to the fear of death. Death of the me. I don't want to die. The mic.
As Ramesh said, that a person has the power to create. So is that, and as you said, that because the me doesn't want to die, so is that is that the me is continuous in planning? It goes on doing the plannings every day at every moment. It doesn't want to keep itself vacuum, and it wants to keep itself busy in some or the other plan, either in the imaginary future or in the past. And many times, as you said now, as she has gone across such a severe incident, some experiences, good or bad experiences in life, strengthens that memory. So again, if she gets a good house, again that memory in her mind will sometimes recall and come back, that God's grace that this building won't fall off again. Again, there's a fear. Even one of my friends, who is 3 years older to me, she has recovered from slip disc. She was actually set to go for surgery, but she got some alternative methods to cure her slip disc. And when I had a talk with her, she said that I am still under a fear that it won't rise again. Although she is completely cured, but some experiences of her life, that severe pain that she has gone through, it strengthens her memory. And then anytime when she speaks to me, it says, although everything is going very fine, but when she sits idle, or again when she recalls her memory, when she goes back. So she says, how could I keep myself free from the mind? Because again, the planning goes on. What should I keep myself fit so that I won't get the slip disc problem again? So how one can go or keep oneself, because it is of course that as I have seen that even myself, I don't want to keep myself in a vacuum state. So continuously I'm in the way, I go under planning to do something for the next, to keep our mind busy. So here is what the problem is actually, that the creation takes place again and again. And we said the mind wants to create something new because it doesn't want to get in the state of vacuum.
Yes, but see, actually what all you have said, you have answered your own question quite beautifully. The burden of memory is the conditioning. Now supposing as a child I put my hand in fire and I pull it immediately, I know that fire will hurt me, right? So that is in the memory. The advantage of that, it prevents me from putting my hand again in the fire. Now, the experience your friend has had, obviously the fear will be there that I've had this experience before and I would not like to have it again, which is natural. But this fighting this fear is where the me comes in. To accept something happened in the past, I got cured, it might happen in the future, it's a very natural thought process. To negate this thought process is not natural. Therefore, what the me does is it tries to fight the fear. I should not be fearful. You are not fearful. Fear arose as a part of life and life's conditioning, which put you through a set of circumstances. Fear arose. It is a natural part. The pushing down the fear, saying, I should not be like this, why am I like this, that is not natural. And the arising of the fear is witnessed with the understanding that whether or not this event happens again is not in my control. All I can do is do my best in terms of treatments, in terms of therapies. All I can do is do my best. Thereafter, it is God's will. So we make a battle out of fear and fighting fear, but we have to accept. But what is that fear? Is the fear of survival, obviously, because we are built to survive. That is the way we are designed. Now, regarding keeping the mind busy all the time, it depends, because after all, there's a saying, the idle mind is a devil's workshop. What does that mean? Means you may be thinking all the time if there is nothing to do. But for the sage, that compulsion is not there. His is a vacant mind, open to what is and what the next moment brings. And that is why Maharaj said, consciousness is the greatest paradox. Because we love it so much, we don't want to die. Yet we find it unbearable, so we keep wanting to do things. That is why he said consciousness is a cheat. But the sage will not just sit in his chair with a vacant mind. If he feels like going out for a walk, he'll go out for a walk. Mind is still vacant. In that sense, life will be lived. But the burden of the thinking mind with its sense of doership is removed. It is not that a sage does not feel fear. If his nature is of fear, he will feel it. I gave the example of somebody at the retreat. I gave the example of a man who is now in his 90s, who had gone for Krishnamurti satsang, J. Krishnamurti. And then when Krishnamurti was getting into his car to leave the venue, a loud firework went off in the distance. And he actually saw Krishnamurti shudder. Shocked, bewildered, whereas the person next to Krishnamurti, nothing happened. Which means it was Krishnamurti's nature to get that reaction. That's all it means. But what we do is we get involved in that. We start labeling that and then get involved and then say, why is this? Why am I feeling this? I should not feel this. That is where our story begins. The story to perpetuate me. Because now I know who I am. Because I put all these labels around me. So they tell me who I am. That is how I survive. because in vacancy I cannot survive. So what is one identified with, which defines me? You're driving on the road, someone cuts into your lane or dents your car. My car, how dare he do this to me? The me has got identified with the car. It's a threat, he dented my car. How dare he? Threat to me. This is how it works. But he dents someone else's car, you don't care. I was at the Gateway of India once. I was in a taxi, the black and yellow, Kali Pili. And another Kali Pili cut his Kali Pili and both the signal turned red, so both landed side by side. So my driver is telling that driver, kya kabutar dekh rahe the? Were you seeing pigeons? So my driver actually replied saying, main to dekh raha, kabutar dekh raha tha, aap kya kar rahe the? I was watching the pigeons, what were you doing?
I want to share something.
Take the mic.
Because he's talking about slip disc. So I came for the first talk, I think it was November or October 2017. And in Feb 2018, I was diagnosed with this slip disc problem. So it's been 2.5 years I'm living with this problem. But this teaching has really helped to pull that sting of the pain that you feel. It's really helped me immensely.
It's not very good to say
that. My whole involvement with that whole, whenever the pain arises, I mean, I've learned to accept it. And my doctors say, perhaps, I've been seeing a lot of orthos. Many of them have suggested to do surgeries, but I'm not convinced with it. I have some colleagues who's somebody in the family, they're quite old and they've lived with this condition for almost 20, 30 years, 40 years. So there's this fear ki what is happening. But at the same time, there's this acceptance ki perhaps this is how it's supposed to be. And this whole thing of, you know, accepting it and taking it as God will, or maybe, you know, it's predestined just to crush. So it gives me one faith that perhaps it will pass, perhaps someday. The other bit is, I mean, that whole involvement, as in the resistance, whenever the pain arises, it sort of is, I see it dissolving.
That is very crucial. That is, in fact, one big gift of the teaching. See, if he had not said it, you would have not spoken. That means, is there free will? Same thing with Ramana Maharshi. When he said there is no such thing as free will and someone put up their hand. And he said, of course, I think there is free will. He said, no, if I had not said there is no such thing as free will, you would not have put up your hand. Everything is interconnected. And human nature is that we question God when tragedies come and calamities come. Now, do we thank God for all our buildings being up every day? Isn't that unfair? Shouldn't we be thanking God every day that this, thank God, this has stayed up? We don't. Only when we are threatened, when our existence is threatened, then the thing comes, how can God do this? Why is he doing this to me? The me is under threat of existence. The sage is eternally thankful to God each and every moment. That is called offering your life to the divine. Can you imagine what all God has done in this moment so that this building doesn't fall down now? But it takes us suffering to come to this understanding. So this whole teaching is to understand why. That is what it is. When things are going smoothly, the me is not under any threat.
It makes the me more comfortable.
The gift of the teaching is a lot of clarity. Clarity is meditation. To be clear is meditation. Did I tell you all what the prisoner said after the meditation class in prison? Someone, the class teacher at the end of the meditation asked the prisoners, how was the meditation? So this man said, it was just so beautiful. I had so much clarity. So the teacher asked, in what way? He said, before the meditation, I felt like killing someone. And after the meditation, I know whom.